Today we hear from Brad Andrus. Brad is a Texas-based entrepreneur who's built many different businesses, mostly in real estate, but he's certainly ventured out into different non-real estate enterprises. I really enjoyed this. I was trying to keep the episode to under 40 minutes, but I'll be honest, I kept it going because I just thoroughly enjoyed this conversation with Brad. We talk about how out of college, he didn't really know what he wanted to do. He got a job like many people do. And then he went into, he was doing some real estate investing. He'd built up his net worth at age 27 or 28 to approximately $1 million. And then the 2008 crash happened and that wiped him out almost to zero. And I think his income was less than zero each month because he had debt to deal with. And we talk about how he's significantly rebuilt. You know, he's got many different companies that he owns now. He could have retired years ago, but has that entrepreneurial drive. And toward the end, we talk a lot about AI, and I think you're going to want to stick around for that. He's doing some really cool things in the AI space. He's got his own podcast that is specifically focused on AI and how and what they're doing to help companies use AI. So it's not like you need to be the AI expert in the room. Just thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. One of the through lines with this conversation is just the importance of relationships. And it crops up throughout the episode is the power of people and working with other people and having healthy relationships that are win-win and just adding value to others and how strength in numbers is so powerful. It's just a very positive, uplifting episode. I think you're going to enjoy it.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversitytoabundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. I am your host, Jamie Bateman, and today we have with us Brad Andrus. Brad is the founder of Northbridge, a commercial real estate company, as well as several other companies that we're going to touch on as we hear from Brad. Brad, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on, Jamie.
Absolutely. This is going to be a fun conversation. I know we're going to get a lot out of this. I know you've been an active entrepreneur and real estate investor for decades now.
I can't believe it's been decades, but it has, yeah.
The 2.5 decades really we're coming up on, it sounds like. So why don't you talk for the listener briefly before we jump into your backstory, can you talk about some of the abundance that you're living in that you've been able to experience and benefit from? I know there's been a ton of ups and downs and hard work. We're going to get into that. But today, how are you able to live in abundance?
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So I was just talking to, I've got a couple of young guys on our team and was having a conversation like this with them recently. And I just, the best example I could come up with, really the way I feel like my life is playing out right now is I'm really grateful and fortunate that I can kind of look at a mature fruit tree, if we want to use that example, and it's actually more than one tree. It's a little small orchard of fruit trees.
Nice.
That I can go out and kind of look at and look at the growth and what's become of them, and more than anything, see the fruit on hanging off those trees. You know, if it's an apple tree, you know, be able to pluck that apple and nice juicy bite of apple, you know, and enjoy that and give me some nourishment. Right. And so that's what That's where I feel like I am. I'm that this orchard tree or this orchard is not as large as others may have their orchards. The trees may not be as big and as mature, but for me, where they are right now, I really enjoy kind of where it is, and I still want to continue to grow that orchard and grow let those trees grow and mature even more. But really, what I'm describing is the fruits of a lot of labor, many years and hard work and stress and toil to get to where there's a multitude of investments that are now paying dividends, and I can look around and I can see the cash flow from this one, or hey, over there it's not cash flowing, but I see the appreciation in that one that's happening over here. Like, I know I've got a ton of equity in that, so if I need to go do something that requires some immediate cash, I can pull from it. I've got a line of credit secured by this one that I can. So all these things that have kind of built up over time allow me to continue to really grow that orchard and those investments. But also on the personal side, we're recently now empty nesters, and having the freedom that being investing in real estate and some other companies that we'll talk about has allowed us to, we get to go travel and take off and kind of do what we want, both have the time to do it and fortunately the finances to do
Yeah,
it.
no, I love that analogy. And so the trees in the orchard may be a particular investment or also a business, right? Is that what you're
Right.
saying? Got it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's there's my path has been, and part of this is pretty, I think, pretty common for entrepreneurial minded people, but I there's a lot of value in being laser focused on something, but I can't really do that. I can't, I have a hard time staying laser focused. It doesn't mean that I'm distracted and I don't care still about this, but I'm always, new ideas, new things going on. And so that has created this orchard where it's not all apple trees. There's apples, there's pears, there's cherries, there's all kinds of different trees that are paying different
Well, I
dividends.
love that you're, it sounds like though, even though you still have that drive to build and create, and I'm guessing that will never go away, but sounds like you've been able to at least step back and you mentioned traveling, take some time off and enjoy the fruits of your labor. And I think that's where maybe some entrepreneurs just can't seem to do that, and it's it's just drive, 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 and I mean, what's it all for if you can't enjoy it?
That is a question that I have to ask myself, and I've had others ask me, just kind of helping me, mentors over the years, like, when's enough enough? And so those are things that everybody's got to wrestle with and fight with. And like you said, I think for those of us that are kind of, built in this way to go and go and create and build, it's a tough thing to wrestle with, and I still struggle with it. And so I'm trying to balance that and find that right balance.
Well,
And
and I think, and we'll jump back into your backstory in a minute, but I think that's for one, one of the things we talk about on the show is that there's no single, prescription or way to get to success. And two, success, you may define success differently than I do, and that's okay. And also, you have seasons in your life. I have seasons in my life. And so just because you were laser focused on this 10 years ago doesn't mean you need to be laser focused on that or anything in particular right now. So, we success does leave clues, but it's not a one size fits all model for certainly if you look across someone's entire life
For sure.
and across the entire population, there's so many variables and ways to succeed and be fulfilled and serve others. So, Brad, you mentioned to me before we hit record the year, you mentioned the year 2001. Let's jump back there and let's talk about your backstory because I know you've had some real trials and tribulations. We've talked about some of the successes you're currently enjoying, but it has not been easy. So, what did 2001 look like for you? What was your just paint the picture for us.
So graduating college from Brigham Young University, my wife and I had been married probably about a year. I guess it was about a year before graduation. No, I'm sorry, about 2 years. I had about 2 years left when we got married. We had our first kid about a year, 8, 9 months before graduation. And, coming out of kind of the market in general was good, but we were kind of coming out of that dot-com little bubble. And so it wasn't a terrible time to be job hunting, but it probably wasn't the best time either. And so, really trying to figure out what I wanted to do. My undergrad was in marketing and advertising. I'd always been a little more on the creative, enjoyed more of the creative side of things. And so thought, hey, that's where I want to work for an ad agency. I grew up in the Dallas area, knew that we knew that we wanted to move back to Texas. And so started looking around where I could find a job like that. Ended up working, starting with a community bank as their really, it was a very small community bank, probably about 150 million in assets at the time. And they had just gotten to the size where they needed kind of this full-time marketing person. It'd been spread amongst some of the team there. And so I was their marketing director, which sounded like a really great title coming right out of college. And it was a great opportunity. But that's kind of where I got started. As I started working for the bank, started kind of looking around again. I'm pretty much focused on the marketing side of things, but started looking around and realizing there's a lot of real estate things going on and other businesses, people that are walking in, what business are they in? Banking, I ended up over the course of probably the next 16, 17 years or 15 years, I guess, working in at two different community banks. And that ended up being an amazing foundation for a variety of reasons that we can get into. But one of them was that I got to see a lot of investors, entrepreneurs, borrowers, and it was just always amazing to me that the variety of ways that people were making money. And you might have two guys in the same exact industry. This was another real learning lesson for me, is like two guys in the same industry, same market, and one of them is wildly successful and the other's just essentially living, paycheck to paycheck, even if he's an entrepreneur, has his own business and living job to job. And what's the difference here? What's going on? Well, it's really that guy. It's the operator, how he op his mindset and how disciplined he is and the way he goes about running his business. So I was picking up these little clues along the way, but that's kind of where I really started. My eyes started. I'd never had any interest in real estate, didn't really know anything about it, didn't have really big aspirations to be an entrepreneur. I didn't, I just was a creative guy wanting to be kind of marketing, advertising.
Well, I love that what you just said about the two different, two guys that you're comparing there, just because so many people, I mean, there are certainly are a ton of external factors that we can't control, right? I mean, and we're going to talk about 2008 to, and how that affected you. But at the end of the day, like if there is a lot you can control and focus on, and there's a lot that you can do as an individual to impact the success of your business and those around you. So that's a really, I love that. Yeah, I can relate in a lot of ways. I got out of college and worked for a title company for a couple of years and started seeing real estate investors. I'm like, wait, this seems pretty cool, and then but I did work a W-2 for 14 years and slowly got into the real estate game. And but yeah, just kind of looking around and realizing like this is really interesting. How are these people doing this? And
Well,
didn't
so
really know what I
Jamie,
wanted to do either.
you'll really appreciate this story. I don't know if your listeners will enjoy it as much, but I think you might. My first real estate deal was my primary home, our first home that we bought, as a family. And so again, that was right in 2001. I graduated in the spring, got this job in the fall, and later within a few months, we were like, let's buy a home. We were renting a little duplex and let's buy a home. So was working with a mortgage guy that was at the bank and kind of talking through him. He was getting the loan approved, going through that process, and everything was tracking along. I get this call one day, this is Kim with Denton County Title. I'm like, okay. And she says, I'm calling to schedule your closing. I'm like, I don't know who you are. I'm working with Phil over here at the mortgage company. And she's like, well, no, I know, but my job is to, anyway, describe basically what she does as a title agent, escrow officer. And I'm just like lost. And so I'm like, hey, I tell you what, I'll get back with you. I don't
Right.
know if this is a, it wasn't, I
If it's
wasn't a war,
legitimate.
I wasn't thinking it was a scam, but I was just like,
Right.
I don't know where this all falls together.
Yeah.
And so called Phil, the mortgage guy, and he's like, yeah, this is the normal
This is,
thing. This
yeah,
is the
I mean,
way it goes. Didn't
it's
know
a,
anything about buying real
yeah,
estate. That was my
exactly.
first
And
exposure.
I realized that very quickly. I mean, my father was a real estate agent, all the whole time I grew up. So like you would think I would know slightly, maybe more than the next person the same age as me, but no, I knew nothing. I mean, I had no idea what a settlement, what a HUD-1 was. I didn't understand anything about title insurance, and they don't teach any of this in school. So, at least they didn't for me.
Well, not my
and
degree anyway.
yeah, so yeah, just opened up my eyes, and it's really important information. If you're, even if you're not going to be an investor, if you're just going to buy a house, but anyway, so okay, so you worked for two different community banks. And that was how did that progress?
Yeah, there was a little, so a little gap. So basically, again, towards the end of that first working with that first bank, that I left that job in 2006. Probably the last year, year and a half of that job, I had actually transitioned to the lending side as a consumer lender, but primarily doing commercial real estate lending. And so that again was just another great step in the direction I wanted to go of that I started realizing I wanted to go of understanding real estate. From 2001 to then, I'd started buying some rent houses, built a couple of duplexes, and so started after buying our first home. And I had a buddy call me. He's like, "Hey, I think we could do this, you know, buy this old house and add on to it, turn it into a duplex." We did
Nice.
that together, and that was just like, I'm hooked, you know.
Eye-opening, yeah.
Totally hooked. So started doing that for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years and got into the lending side on the bank. And at that point, it's like, all right, I've got a little war chest here. I've got some things already going. I'm ready to go out on my own and do this for myself. And didn't really, you know, a little young and naive for sure, didn't really give enough thought to what would be the best path to eventually being out on your own if you're going to do this. I just had an opportunity through a bank customer said, "Hey, we could go build some houses together. You know, you've got a little capital, you've got a little know-how. I know how to build some houses. Let's go do it." So, sounds good to me. That sounds better than sitting behind that desk at the bank all day. And so,
Absolutely.
left the bank and started building houses. We probably built 70, 80 houses, you know, some duplexes and different things, and most of which we were just selling to others, you know. And so that was going okay. Wasn't great. Wasn't terrible. Realized I didn't love. I love working with people, but I'm kind of a people pleaser. And so if you're building a home for someone and you're always trying to make them happy, you know, you can't make
It's,
any money
you
that
can't.
way. You can't make them happy anyway, but you certainly
No.
can't try and make money along the way doing
Oh,
that. And so,
right. For sure.
but anyway, that whole world really came to kind of a screeching halt in 2008. I was already starting to think this isn't really what I want to do long term, but 2008 made the decision for me, like, all right, get out of that little deal. So that kind of was my little world that I built. I kept my rent houses and but everything else, my little war chest that I had built, you know, kind of even the dreams I had kind of got crushed right
Yeah,
there.
I mean, talk about that. And this is, the show is From Adversity to Abundance. And as you know, I remember 2008, but maybe some of our listeners might quickly read about it, but not really appreciate what all was going down. What I mean, how did that? I mean, you said you were already not loving what you were doing, but really mechanically, how did that, crush
Well,
everything?
where it really impacted me and certainly was has been now a lifelong, so far a lifelong lesson from it, one of the lessons, but where it really impacted me is, you know, as a home builder, and again, call ourselves a home builder. We weren't anything major, but we were building houses.
Well, you were
We
building homes, yeah.
were building homes, so we're a home builder. So 2006 and 7, I mean, the market is frothy and just blowing and going, and you couldn't find builders couldn't find really lots to build on. And if you're building homes for a living, you need inventory, you need houses to sell. Well, before that, you need lots
The
to
lot,
build them on,
yeah.
right? And there weren't really there wasn't a lot of options. We had done like a 20 lot little redevelopment of a property, and we'd kind of built through that by about 2007. And I was like looking for more opportunities. Well, we ended up saying we need to control some of our lot inventory, control our own destiny on that front. And by the way, we can make some money. You know, we can develop this piece of land for this, and then build a little profit margin when we roll that lot into the house. So great idea. I think it works well in a lot of
Most
situations,
of the
but
time,
in
right.
yeah, most of the time in 2008, it the spigot, you know, just got turned off on, it
Right.
felt like almost overnight. And those lots that we hadn't even finished developing, you know, that we were thinking, well, we'll sell these for 45, 50,000. I mean, practically couldn't give them away, you know,
Wow.
a few
Yeah.
months later. By the
Right.
time we actually finished those lots, I mean, I couldn't find, we weren't building houses anymore. The lending side of things for spec home, new construction, it's often the
Right.
mortgage, you
Right.
know, the mortgage world had kind of imploded. And
Right.
so it was affecting, you know, buyers and certainly builders in a roundabout way. And so, but where I really got stung was having several of these land development tracts that had no way of cash flowing, you know, and you've got debt against it that's just mounting up and just eating you alive, right? So that's where I really got stung. I think had I not had those things, I mean, again, I did manage to hold on to the small, I don't know, maybe 10 rent house portfolio that I had at the time. And that helped a little bit because I mean, I still had debt on all those, but each one of them might have been throwing off after debt service and expenses, maybe a couple hundred dollars. And so cumulatively, there was something there. You know, it's certainly enough to keep those paid for, but over here on the other
Well,
side,
maybe those were some of the seeds that led to your current
for
orchard.
sure.
So, two things on the, on the 2008 front. One, if you want to get, you can get as specific as you want, of course, but income or net worth wise, what were things looking like beforehand and then after? And then the second question is more just kind of what would you have, what would you do differently? It's almost an unfair question. Nobody saw the crash coming like it did, but what were your lessons learned and what would you do differently if you had to do it all over again? But question number one, like really financially, how did it impact you?
I would say that, and again, I was still, you know, early in
Right.
my
You were
wealth
young.
building, you know, it's still what, I don't know, 27, 28. So it wasn't like I'd had decades under my belt that I was losing millions and millions of dollars. But for me, it was everything I pretty much everything I had. Again, just fought tooth and nail to hang on to these some of these investment properties I had. But you know, I don't know. Probably if I had to, I could go back and look, I've saved all these financial statements over the years, but probably, you know, might have been showing maybe $1 million of net worth at the time. And we had built the home building company where I think I was drawing about $120,000, basically 10 grand a month as a salary. Plus, when a house sold, I'd get little pops that, you know, my income might have been a couple of hundred, you know,
Yeah. Well, I
250 in any
appreciate you
given
sharing that.
year.
I mean, that's still, and that's more money, that was a couple, it was 2.5 decades ago or 2 decades ago almost, rather. So, I mean, that's good money for a 27-year-old, right?
But it all went pretty much flush
Just
down the toilet.
vanished.
Again, some of that, again, that those rent houses and the value kind of equity I had in that stayed, but cash went away. Most of the any other assets, anything that didn't have some income producing component to it, I had to let go. I had to work deals with the bank and get out of them. And so it was some dark days. I mean, so I don't know, that literally, that probably took my net worth down to, I mean, I was still positive, I'd say, but only because of some of
Barely.
those rent houses. And so maybe $100,000 to $200,000 positive net worth, you
No,
know,
I appreciate you
and
sharing that.
income to zero,
Zero.
essentially closed that, shut that thing down. And now it's negative, all negative money going out the door, nothing coming in.
So before we get into lessons learned or what you would do differently, how did that financial crash, and I'm talking yours personally, How did that impact your family life and your personal life?
Hard not to separate those things, you know.
Yeah.
It really is difficult. And you know, even over the last couple of decades, as things have gotten trending, you know, in a much more positive direction, you know, you're still there's always little valleys here and there. And it's, for me, it's always been important to kind of not bring that home. I mean, as an
Yeah.
entrepreneur and the guy, the breadwinner, and kind of the guy that's it's tough to let
Right.
that go when you walk in the door. But man, nothing is more important than family and relationships. And so,
Yeah.
you know, we just got to fight to kind of check that at the door. But it was tough. It was, I remember, you know, breaking down to my wife and telling her kind of where things stood. And it was definitely some hard and dark
Yeah.
days, you know. That led me to, you know, it forced me essentially back into banking. And
Okay.
I didn't hate banking, so it wasn't like it was a
Right.
terrible option. But the good news is I had, because I had built up a little bit of, you know, relationship in the community and kind
Sure.
of was known. There were a couple of banks that said, yeah, you know, if
Yeah, well,
you
and you
want to
also
get
had
back into
banking
that,
experience too,
the
which
banking
helped.
experience to
Yeah.
fall back on.
So,
So come 2008, I went back to work for
okay.
a community bank, a new
Yeah.
community bank.
Yeah. Well, so I guess it's sort of a two-part question, but could you have done anything? Did you really make mistakes leading into 2008? Like, I'm sure there were little mistakes, but I'm saying, really, could you have done anything differently? And if so, what?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty common. I don't know. For me, in my experience looking around, it's not unusual that guys will enter into some sort of partnership when they want to go out and do something. And I value partnerships, a good partnership, tremendously. And where each party or multiple parties are bringing their strengths. Okay, we've got some weaknesses, but you can offset that. But they're bringing something to the table. What I learned, and so if I had known a little bit better, the partnership I went into to build to do the home building thing wasn't a good partnership.
Gotcha.
There was just a little bit of it wasn't good, because while I had a little war chest, I didn't have deep enough pockets to really fund this operation. And so
Right.
what we needed was a true capital partner that could have carried that piece. Not to mention the kind of the partner that had the know-how and the building side of things just didn't quite turn out to be what I'd hoped he was. And so
Gotcha.
I could have picked a better partnership partner, or
Yeah.
partnership is
Right.
one. And the other thing that I couldn't have done, I what I outside of having a partner, which could have helped. And I remember talking about this in one entrepreneurship class I had in college, that, you know, an entrepreneur is like, hey, would you rather have 50% of this big number or 100% of this
Right,
tiny number?
right,
You
right.
know, well, give me 50%. So we should have opened the door and said, hey, somebody, come in with this land deal with us. You can make some money and you take more of the risk and bring the capital to do it. But we didn't do that. We tried to do it on our own. And so I don't know if I mean, I can see now
Yeah,
where the
no, and
wisdom
the
is.
goal is not to beat you up, and it's
No, yeah.
easy to look back and say, oh, this is what you did wrong, Brad. It's like, but we're trying to, there are going to be, may not be 2008 exactly, but there are going to be, similar challenges ahead for people. So,
I
that's
think the big lessons, I mean, yeah, find good partners if you're gonna go into partnerships, but also just go well, you know, be well capitalized. And that's where a lot of times the partnerships come from, you know, is one guy. I've got the ideas, I got the know-how, but I don't
Right.
have the capital, so
Sure.
I need the capital partner. So
Yeah.
be well capitalized in whatever you're doing. And you don't have to use all your own money all the time, you know, and keep that war chest for the rainy days or for other investments and
Yeah. And I think a
opportunities.
lot of, especially younger real estate investors and entrepreneurs, don't necessarily see it from the capital partner's perspective and see the fact that you're solving a problem for them. If it,
Right.
assuming it's a good partnership, but you're bringing a lot to the table and they
Exactly.
need you, they,
Sure.
so, it's, I think it can be easy for people to say, well, why would they want to give their money to me. It's like, well, no, you're providing value to them as well. So we don't have time to cover all the ups and downs of your career. We're definitely going to hit on and dive into some of the other things you have going on now. But kind of quickly walk us through from, that second banking phase of your career through today. What are some of the companies you've created and how have things gone since then?
So in 2008, went back into banking full time, and really, again, I tried to be as honest with my employer at that time. Hey, look, I've always invested in some real estate. I'd like to continue to do it. I'm not in a great spot to do that right now, but as things improve, I'd like to do that. So I was very upfront with them about that, and they were very great about it and said, hey, as long as you come to us as your primary lender, we get the opportunity to do it if we want to do it, you know. And so I really started kind of rebuilding both the cash war chest, but also starting to build that portfolio up a little bit more. And
Nice.
it was almost exclusively single family rentals at
Okay.
that time. And mostly in the town that I lived in, you know, in a smaller town outside of Denton. We lived in Crum at the time. And this little town, you know, didn't have any real apartment complexes or anything. I knew so many people there, very well connected in the community. And I found over the 15-ish years that from the first one I bought to when I sold them all, I'll get into that. I don't know, you know, upwards of 20, 25 rentals during that time. I mean, I might have experienced, I could count on one hand, probably the number of months of vacancy across the portfolio that I experienced. It
Wow.
was just a strong, just very limited supply. And so
Sure.
strong market from that sense. And so enjoyed that. But as I was working in the banking in that bank, that second bank, I really got more and more exposed to commercial real estate,
Okay.
doing more of that lending, also, you know, some of the business lending. And by about 2012, 13, started kind of getting those thoughts back in my head again. You know, I don't think I want to do this forever. It's a good job. I was working with a great bank, good people. I could have been there my whole career. There's no doubt about it. Family life was happy. Everything was
Right.
going well, but it's like it
Yeah,
wasn't
it wasn't
totally
enough.
scratching all the entrepreneurial itches, you know. So I was fortunate to work with a commercial broker in town who he was referring me business. I'd refer him business. It was a good relationship. He kind of approached me in about 2013 and said, hey man, the market's really picking back up. I think you'd be really good in commercial brokerage. I never thought about that. I'm like, that's 100% commission, right? He's like, yeah, but and so it took him a couple of years,
Oh,
really,
really?
of talking to me, kind of coaching me through it, guiding me what it would look like, and ultimately him coming up with a structure that kind of put a little floor in it. And so I left banking in 2015 to go into brokerage, commercial real estate brokerage. As an agent, basically a two-man shop, and I was his right-hand man, learning that business and understanding it. And we one of the things that he felt like was important, but never wanted to mess with or touch was property management and being somewhat vertically integrated in that way, because he would find, hey, he'd represent a client on a retail center that they'd buy, then they would go hire XYZ management company. He might be stay on as leasing, but over time they were spending a lot more time talking and working with the property manager, who might also have some brokerage in there, and he would start losing clients that way. And then when
Sure.
they go to sell, they're talking to the property manager about selling
I
and maybe
see.
their broker that's in-house. And so wanted to be a little more sticky in that way. And so I said, you know, that's a business I've always thought would be interesting. I've got my own portfolio that I think is at the point where I was managing it all myself. I'd love to have some help doing that. And so we started the property management company at that time. That's Northbridge. That's where the Northbridge came from. And so that's become a lot more, but at the time it was property management.
So, and that was both residential and commercial property management,
It
or?
was primarily commercial, but we definitely took residential on. We were managing my rent houses, and then we had a couple of other small, well, one fairly large multifamily complex. But we knew pretty early in, like, we want to be commercial. We want to live in the commercial
The
world. And
commercial
so
space. Yeah.
it took us a few years to kind of get totally 100% there, but yeah.
Gotcha. Would you say, now I'm much more familiar with, the residential space, but would you say property management in as a whole is very, can be very lucrative in and of itself, or is it primarily that you're kind of that sticky point, if you will, like you already said, that you can really benefit financially from other sources because you have the property management arm?
We have found that it's not a very profitable business.
Okay.
I mean, by
Yeah.
you know, now I want to talk a little bit about AI and some things
Yeah.
we're using.
Absolutely.
We're using AI in
For
that
sure.
business to help us be more efficient. But it historically has been a pretty, labor, quote unquote, labor intensive business. I mean, you
Right.
get a certain number of properties, and that's more than this one person can handle. So you got to hire another person.
Right.
Like every time you get up to a level where you're just starting to make some money,
Right.
you really need to hire another person.
Right.
And so it's always chasing that around. And so we pretty much acknowledged that and understood that almost from the beginning. But I'll say this, there are so many other benefits to, having a property management, from my perspective, from having a property management company than the actual dollars. What it does provide us is this really strong foundation of cash flow. So, I mean,
Sure.
that's
This
we can count
recurring
on this cash
revenue,
flow,
keep the
recurring
lights on,
revenue,
right? Yeah,
keep the lights
absolutely.
on, keep the operation going,
Yeah.
including a really strong team of people. So
Nice.
we manage a lot of third-party properties, but we also manage everything that we
Right.
buy, and
Right.
we pay ourselves a fee to do that. But it's really in-house now. I get to see it, touch it, feel it, on a regular basis, what's
Yeah.
going on, know exactly what's going on. The other thing it does is like I was describing, is it does make us really sticky in that brokerage world. It gives us, and it gives us not only in the brokerage world, as now as we've become more and more investors and doing some of our own development things,
Yeah.
we find that through the management company, we get opportunities to
Yeah.
buy
Yeah.
and
I mean,
invest.
on a lesser scale, and I'm in the Baltimore, Maryland area, but yeah, my property manager, we've had many conversations about, do I want to partner with him, or how could this go? But I've seen where I've referred many different clients to him for different things, property management. He has a rehab arm, and then just, and I'm not saying I haven't benefited from him either, but it's just, I can see how he's benefited in many ways just being a property manager. So you mentioned
Well,
AI.
I want to just make one more mention of, and
Yeah.
this is as a real estate investor. So I basically by 2017, I said, I want to do a 1031. I want to sell all my house, rent houses, and exchange into commercial.
Yeah.
But I believe that some of the success that I enjoy in commercial real estate investing comes from, one, my work in brokerage, and two, my work in property management. And we've got a team that really runs. I don't do a lot of the actual management, but again,
Yeah.
around it, talking about it enough.
Right.
I mean, when you run a property management company, you get to live
Yeah,
like the nitty-gritty of
you see
what it takes
everything.
to, yeah,
Yeah.
and what it takes for a property to be successful. I
Right.
mean, you see, what tenants value
Right.
out of a property. You see the pitfalls of deferred maintenance. You start to
Right.
really understand the
Yeah.
fundamentals of
For
how
sure.
you can make a property good and keep it full. And so those both broker and same thing with brokers. Like you get to talk to tenants that are
Right.
saying, well, no, I don't like this property because of that. Oh, okay. Well,
Yeah.
file that away. Like, I don't want to buy a property because tenants don't
Right,
like this,
that's good
So
intel.
those, as it's really honed my skills as an investor,
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
by
No, and
being in
my property
brokerage
manager has a
management.
lot of his own investments, and he keeps adding because he knows what to look for, he knows what to buy. And when we say property management, people may not everyone realizes, like, it's not just the property, and there's a, as you've alluded to, there's kind of the leasing arm as well as the actual property management. So, and depending on how it's set up, and there are variables there, but there's really almost like a real estate agent side of it, and then like the construction property management side of it as well. So there's a lot going on there that's a
A lot.
valuable position to be in. But you mentioned AI, and I've been incorporating AI into my business a lot more, and just everyday life. I mean, it's
Amazing, yeah.
amazing. It's really fascinating. I mean, I could talk about a lot about it, and There's still frustration there, and it's never going to be perfect, I don't think, but I'd love to talk to you about how you're incorporating AI into your business or businesses. I know you have a podcast that deals with AI as well. So for a couple minutes here, just the floor is yours. Talk about AI, the present and the future, maybe.
A couple of minutes, let me cram that in. But
Yeah.
no, everybody's hearing about AI and kind of, hey, we got to, it's such a buzzword. And I think for most of us, our first exposure is probably ChatGPT, and that
Right.
was certainly mine. About a year ago is when I really kind of, I was dealing with an issue on a property, a lease, a tenant issue, and I was like, I was asking one of my brothers who kind of is also does a lot of real estate stuff, and I even starting to think about calling an attorney. He's like, hey, have you talked to or kind of interact with ChatGPT about this? I'm like, no, I don't even think about that. And he's like, well, try it. And I did. And I'm like, whoa, it's got all the answers. It knows
Right.
exactly what, but I've since learned, no, it doesn't have all the answers. It's not
Right.
perfect, but it really did help me through that situation. And I was
Yeah.
able to work through it without, and I'm not suggesting that we don't need attorneys anymore, but
Right.
I was able to work
No.
through that particular
Yeah.
situation. Wasn't serious, real serious, but through the help of ChatGPT. And so that started this snowball of me looking around, talking to other people in my network, other smart guys and entrepreneurs, like, what are y'all doing? And we kind of all looked at each other like, we really don't know what to do. And so we put this little cohort together, and we just started just meeting at least once a month, sometimes twice a month, just brainstorming, talking about what we're doing. Hey, what tools have you tried? That's led to three of us now that we've got. It's called Weeks Ahead AI, and so yeah, that's our podcast. We think we might be weeks ahead of the average Joe, so to speak.
Right.
And so it's not like
I like
we're
that.
real tech experts or whatever, but we're just
Right.
trying to test it and use it. One of the ways we've used it, real tangible way we've used it, to
Yeah.
give you an example, and then we can move on. But the I talked about our property management team, and so we're managing upwards of 100 properties. These are commercial properties that you generate a large monthly property management report, sometimes 40, 50 pages. It's got the full balance sheet, income statement, rent roll, the full general ledger of all the transactions that have occurred in that month. And so there's a lot to compile
Yeah.
and send out on a monthly basis to 60, 70 owners. Probably
Right,
not as
right.
many owners as there are properties, but
Right.
and so it's a time-consuming process. And Rebecca Andreessen, that leads our property management team, she's very detailed and very thorough, which is great in a property manager. But when she wants to review each and every one of those
Yeah.
before it goes out with a fine-tooth
She's
comb, make
one
sure there's no
person.
error. It's just too much.
Impossible.
I mean, she was spending days every month,
Right.
reviewing kind of the reports that the accounting and the property management team were putting together for her final blessing before it goes out to the client.
Yeah.
Well, we built a tool, an agent, an AI agent, and that's kind
Yeah.
of a lot of the ways we're thinking now is like the LLMs are great for a lot of things, but where you really move the needle is you build an agent that is very specific to do a very specific task. And this agent's sole job is to take that monthly report, review it for the 10 things we've asked it to look for, or make sure that the name is consistent throughout. Make sure that there aren't any errors in the page numbering.
Yeah.
Some simple things. Other things are like, if there's a discrepancy in our budget versus actual by more than 5%, point that out to me. So we've built it to say we're looking for these specific. That basically
Right.
what Rebecca was looking for when she
Right.
went through the property,
Right.
and now, in a matter of minutes, it runs through it and it
It's
spits
amazing.
out, everything's ready, everything's
Yeah,
good, or
that's
hey, look
amazing.
at this area. And so it's taken her 2 days of review down to a few hours, and
Right.
it's
So,
just
and
amazing.
for someone who's not, I'm weeks behind you, if you will. But for someone who's maybe weeks behind me, okay, LLMs are like ChatGPT,
Grok,
Claude.
Claude,
Yeah.
the
All right. And
large language models.
right, okay. And then to create an AI agent, not, we're not going to get into the weeds on it, but how does one go about doing that?
Well, what we're telling people, and we're building some tools that if you jump in and listen to her or get on our website, weeksahead.ai, you can see some of what we're doing. But right now, one of the things that we found and we're finding beneficial as we network with other people is just having some guys, some programmers or engineers that we can refer people to. We don't really build, we're starting to build something that can kind of maybe a platform for people to build some agents and use. I think it'll be super beneficial. It's not really ready right now. So we hired an engineer.
Gotcha.
In
No,
that case,
I
we
love
paid
that.
him like $7,500. He built this tool for us, and that's all it is. And at the time, and it still does, it seems like such a bargain. But today, even 6, 8 months later from when we built it, we probably could have that built for $2,000 or $3,000. And so the cost of some of these things
Keeps going
as
down.
engineers and programmers are getting more accustomed to doing them and using AI to help them do them, the cost is already coming down. But I would find a good
And
programmer
you
engineer.
you go to like Upwork or something like that to find somebody like that?
We found a couple of guys through our network, and
Gotcha.
these are more local guys that just we
Well,
for us just we're a little more known quantities,
sure. So I
but the
mean,
platform
for me, I
works.
think, or for a lot of people, I think that type of that advice you just gave is comforting, because it's like, this can be overwhelming, this whole AI
Yes.
thing. It's like, I must be so far behind, I shouldn't even try. I can't code, I don't know anything, I'm gonna get lost in this, I'll just quit. It's like, no, like you just said, you can hire people to do this, and
And
work for
there
them.
are times, even when we're building that agent, it's like, oh my gosh, this is a lot of work. It's not like, hey, just here, go do this and it overnight it works. You gotta, it's really just like training an employee. Let's say instead I were to have hired a person that's their only job. Well, day one, they're not gonna be perfect at it. And they're gonna, hey, I need you to make sure you're looking for this and don't do that. And that it took that same kind of process. It was probably a quicker learning curve, but same kind of process with this agent. But man, it's there forever for $7,500. It's just
No, I've gotten into little I've lectured ChatGPT on some of my own principles. It's kind of fun. It's kind of funny how it goes. It's like, I'm like, well, you said you would have it done, and by this date, and you didn't. And it's like, I really value when people do what they say they're going to do, but are you a person? I don't know. But we're almost out of time. I've really enjoyed this. I've got some rapid fire questions, Brad. Are you
okay,
ready?
let's do it.
All right. If you were given $10 million today, no, it doesn't have to be used for anything in particular, what would you do with it?
Well, I think I would continue
Doing
scatter
what you're doing.
shooting. Well, yeah, I would scatter it amongst a variety of investments. I would certainly invest some in a safe, investment that's liquid. One of the things that I've found that it's like I'm not very good at investing in the stock market. I've just never had any luck personally trying to do that. So I very much believe in anything you're going to do. If you don't really know what you're doing, pay somebody that does it at a professional level, and that's really their business. And so I'd go find a good investment money manager
Advisor.
guy and advisor, and that's what I do. And I work with him, and he does a great job. I mean, and it's not like we're hitting home runs, but we're 10, 12 to 15% a year. Maybe it's 8% on a low year. But the other thing I do with that is I have him set up a line of credit against it. And I'm able to use that line of credit to go kind of be a little more nimble and still keep that growth going on over here. So I
I
would
like that.
definitely set some of that over there. I'd go buy some direct real estate that I own solely, hire a good property manager. I know one in DFW if you need one. I would invest in some other businesses as well. The success I've had in other startups outside of the ones that I've mentioned here that we've been doing directly. The success I've had is identifying good operators, young guys that have been in an industry for 10, 15 years, know what they're doing, have relationships, are hungry to do, and they want to do something on their own, but they're kind of working for the man, so to speak, right now. Let's bring them over, pluck them out, back them with capital, back them with just general business knowledge and expertise, and watch them take off. And it has worked, really well
Well,
doing
there is a
that.
common theme here, because you mentioned the partnership and how important it is, right, to pick the best, a good partner. And then you mentioned hiring an engineer to do the AI work for you. And then you just talked about hiring operators. So, I don't think with all this AI talk, the people side of things is not going to
We need
go
good
away. It's
people,
really
no doubt.
important. So, if you could go back and give your 18-year-old self some advice, what would that be?
Focus on relationships.
That's great.
And that's true in our families, our with our spouses, our
Yeah.
kids, but the people we hire or our coworkers, I mean, in real estate, our tenants. I mean, having a
Sure.
good working relationship with your tenant, I mean, it makes
Right.
all the world of difference. You give them a little grace here, they're going to give you grace when the roof's
Sure.
leaking, or vice versa. So
Right.
focus on relationships.
That's really good. If you could have coffee with any historical figure, who would you choose?
Have to be Jesus Christ.
There you go.
That'd be the best cup of coffee ever, I think.
It's tough to get better than that one. What's a struggle that you're facing or that you're dealing with in your business or professional life right now?
Well, I'm at the, and I'm not at retirement age, but again, I told you that we're recent empty nesters, and starting to think about what the next 10 to 15 years looks like, and what do I want that to look like. And so I've been grinding so hard and kind of head down, go, 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 go. But where do I want to go? And we talked a little bit about that, kind of trying to find that balance. It's a good problem to have, and
Right.
it's fun to think about, but it is a challenge. How do I find a little more balance, and how do I, continue to build a team that allows me to have a little more of that leeway and freedom. So,
Sure, makes sense. How about a book or two that you could recommend for our listener?
I really like Atomic Habits,
That's
and
a
for
great
those
one.
that
James
haven't,
Clear.
check that one out. AI First. I'm sorry, it's either Think AI or AI First. I think it's called Think AI First,
Okay.
something like that. You find it,
Gotcha.
and I'm drawing a blank on the author's name, but read that one recently, and that's become a kind of a mentality. The authors recognize this book is not going to age well. Like,
Right.
everything's changing so rapidly. But the core principle was, whatever challenge you've got, whatever you're facing, think about how AI, think first, how can AI
Right.
help me through this? And that might just be brainstorming with your favorite LLM, or it may
Right.
be, is there an agent I could build? And what
Yeah.
we're finding, Jamie, is that there's really no limitations to
It's
what it
amazing.
can do. I mean, your only limitation is what
Yeah.
you can
Yeah,
think
that's
up.
what I've been trying to make instill in my team as far as I don't know every way that even ChatGPT can help us, but ask ChatGPT,
How
and
can you help me?
how can it's like and it's just amazing what it can spit out, and then you are more specific with the request, the next request that you give it. So
AI First or Think AI. That was a good book.
awesome. All right, Brad, this has been fantastic. Where can our listeners find you online?
Yeah, so mention the weeks ahead .ai. That's our AI focused stuff, and our podcast, Weeks Ahead AI. That's always fun. I think really, really valuable information there. But personally, LinkedIn is the best way. So just Brad Andrus, Northbridge Commercial Real Estate. You'll find me on there. I'd love to connect with your listeners, and really enjoyed being on here and having this
Thank you.
discussion with you
Yeah.
today, Jamie.
And for those not watching, Brad's last name is Andrus. That's how it's spelled.
That's right.
Brad, thank you so much. Any parting words of wisdom for our listener?
So if you get on the LinkedIn, you'll see that one of my little tagline is "Together we can." I believe that as we all kind of try and work together, share thoughts, like there's no there needs to, there should not be a scarcity mindset. There's plenty of opportunities. We need to work together,
Yeah.
collaborate together, share ideas. That's kind of what was really born out of that cohort that I mentioned of thinking about AI. There's been so much good value created that we've. So anyway,
Yeah,
together we
absolutely.
can. Let's keep working
I love
together,
it. I know
and
there's a
be more.
lot of, so much divisiveness and so
Right.
much negativity and hate in the world right now. And I was listening to a podcast just real quickly. I was listening to a podcast yesterday. It was The Diary of a CEO, and it was Morgan Housel, I think is his name, but he wrote the book Psychology of Money. And he was talking about how everything goes in cycles, whether we're talking about financial cycles, like the Great Depression was obviously a rock bottom for a lot of people. But just it's very difficult to see it when you're in that negative state that it can improve and that it will, right? But if you look at history, it always has. So there's no reason we can't have optimism to collaborate and build a better world together. So that's a great
Let's do it.
note to end the episode on. So Brad Andrus, thank you so much for spending your time with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jamie.
It's been a
Appreciate it.
blast. And to the listener, thank you for spending your most valuable resource with us, and that is your time. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversitytoabundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
Hi, I'm Jamie Bateman, and I'm thrilled to offer you something special today: the power of mortgage note investing. This exclusive 5-chapter, 74-page ebook is packed with insights, strategies, actionable tips, and case studies to help you navigate the world of mortgage note investing with confidence. Whether you're just starting out or you're looking to refine your expertise, this ebook will be your go-to guide for building wealth and achieving financial freedom. The best part? It's completely free. Sign up now to claim your copy and take the first step toward mastering mortgage note investing. Don't miss this chance to gain the knowledge and tools you need to succeed. Visit LabradorLending.com and start your journey today.